Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your fire sale of love, of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
I get my peaches out in Georgia. Get my weed from California.
Do you hear that? That is an artiste cooking. That is Justin Bieber in the introduction to Peaches. At the 64th Annual Grammy Awards, which happened last night, Sunday night, in Las Vegas. Justin is trying to let you know he's a man now. He's a grown-up. He's a serious artist, capital S, capital A, R-T-I-S-T. Justin Bieber is not going to show up at the piano just anywhere, but he is going to show up at the Grammys. We're going to talk about the show, and my brief hot take before I introduce everybody is it's not as bad as I feared. But we're going to get into the specifics of why. I am joined by the critical gang, John Perellis, chief pop music critic of the New York Times.
Hi, John.
Wesley Morris, critic at large in the New York Times.
Hi, everybody.
Lindsay Zolads, beloved pop music writer. Hello.
Hello. Still awake.
Okay. There's a lot. Okay. Look.
Lindsay's okay, like, first of all, do I really want to be here?
Okay. I want to, before we get into it, I want to open with a question that I hope everybody has an answer to. This is important. Quickly, without thinking, name one John Batiste song that's not Freedom.
Oh, we are. Freedom. The best song on the album.
Wesley, you're messing up my whole joke. You're messing up my whole bit. That's all right. Okay, John Batiste won Album of the Year. Well, Wesley, since you have volunteered yourself, okay, let's keep it a buck. Joe also wanted everybody to know that he's protesting the Grammys from this point forward because they bear no connection to actual lived music culture.
Wait a minute, why is he starting now?
Yeah, exactly. Joe, I mean, I said that Joe, I said to him earlier today, he has arrived at the kind of like uncanny valley of Grammy perspective, where I think we have all reached maybe at different phases in our careers. The best part about that is when you come out, your brain is totally smooth and you no longer feel any stress or pain. So that's kind of where I'm living. But Joe is like deep in the hole right now.
I'm kind of with Joe.
You're still there. You're still living there. But you can name a John Batiste song.
I'm an institutionalist. But don't indict me, John. Don't try to indict me.
My God. First of all, this is not a carceral podcast. We did not do that. Okay. John Batiste won Album of the Year. Let's go easy. Let's start gently. John Perellis, what are we to make of this, dare I say, perverse thing that happened on the Grammys?
Okay, for one thing, it's the Grammys rewarding a musician that they all know or expect to come in contact with. There are gigs ahead for people who will be accompanied by John Batiste on the Colbert Show. They do not want him playing a bad arrangement behind them when they get that gig.
Whoa!
Oh, see?
He went straight for it.
Oh, in that case, we got like 19 Questlove Grammys coming after this.
Well-deserved. But also, I mean, the Grammys are people who respect old-school fingers-on-the-keyboard technique, which is why Batiste won and which is why Silk Sonic won. And which is why Justin Bieber was playing that very soulful introduction
exactly
to that soulless song.
Correct. Are we just going to skip to that
John
part?
John Caramonica, you cannot defend it. You can't defend it.
I am defending.
Also,
y'all are wilding. No. Whose house? John's house. Okay, let's go. First of all, y'all were unseemly to Peaches in the Record of the Year video. I want to go on record. Lindsay, you are exempted because you were not
Thank
in the video. You are safe. I don't know. If you have negative feelings, just hold them for now. Just sit on them. You can come back with them later. Y'all were unseemly. This is a song that is, first of all, I said nicer things that didn't make the video, for the record. This is a song that is smooth. It has a lovely, lilting elegance to it. It is firmly in the Justin Bieber sings R&B hole, which is where I always want Justin Bieber to be. I want him to live there, wherever the hell else he's lived in the past. I want him to sell that house and move into this neighborhood.
He ain't moving.
So to me, Peaches Not Peaches is obviously overcompensatory, where it's like, we're not sure if this is good, so let's get two R&B singers, actual R&B singers on
That's
this.
That's what it reeks of.
I acknowledge that. That said, I think it is a very solid entry in the Bieber canon.
But John, it's also, if Leave the Door Open is 10 out of 10, R&B, sleek, lilting, elegant, then maybe Peaches is a 6 out of 10.
All I'm saying is the Bruno Six. Mars of 20, if Bruno Mars, the Bruno Mars of 2045 is going to be singing a song that sounds very much like Peaches. That is all I am saying.
I'll wait.
That's all I'm saying.
Can we talk about the bleeps, the weird bleeping in that performance for a second though too? Because they only bleeped, I think they only realized he was singing about weed after he stepped away from the piano, which sort of goes with the entire thesis here that when you couldn't possibly sheen of sing, elegance right. And yeah.
Yes.
He sang that lyric, I think, two or three times before they ended up looping it in the latter portion. And then they just overcompensated.
I don't know what the meetings are like at CBS this morning, but they missed there were 12 things that wait, just bleep it just to make sure, put the sound out just to make sure we know something happened, even though we saw Anderson .Paak's zipper. We saw Doja Cat's everything.
Also, there was a curious bleep on the pre-show when Laverne Cox asked Jack Harlow something about homophobia and hip hop. And mysteriously, the first 5 seconds were totally bleeped.
Whoa.
Oh, wow. I need that tape.
Yeah, and what he said afterward was, totally, fine and, what you would expect. But I'm trying to figure out, what happened in those first 5 seconds. Mm. So if there are any Harlow truthers out there, I'd like to know. Laverne, yeah, send us a note. We're curious.
Listen, they still have PTSD from the whole WAP thing last year, so credit to the CBS censors for living to see another year after that. I think anything beyond that was, an improvement for them.
Amen.
Wesley, what do you make of John Batiste, not simply just winning, but the idea that John Batiste is someone that we collectively need to reckon with in the grander scheme of musical criticism? Because it does not feel that way. Lindsay, I think you pointed out that Freedom was used in a commercial, immediately after the performance.
Right after,
Not the Chrysler commercial that I had anticipated, but something else. But that, what is that music for?
If was it a Chase commercial?
It was Gap. Of all the things. Not the Yeezy collection, but just straight up Gap. It's not
to be clear.
Yeah.
But what does that music exist for? If not for one, to be in the Gap commercial, and two, to receive an Album of the Year nomination, but nothing else.
No, wait a minute. Be fair. Batiste also is representing New Orleans. And New Orleans has a culture of dancing in the streets, which is what the video was about, which is what the stage spectacle was about. And it's a beautiful thing. It doesn't have to be a chart-topping banger. It's a fun song.
That feels disconnected from everything else that we do all day long.
That's a bad thing? That's a vacation.
Ooh.
Not for me.
Ooh.
that's okay. I'll stay
glass
at work.
Half full.
I'll stay at work. I'm good.
I guess my question is, how much of this happens, A, if the show is not on CBS, to be cynical, if this is an NBC program and not the band leader of the late show on the CBS network, but also how much of this happens if he's not the band leader of that show? To me, it almost felt like an Emmy instead of a Grammy. He's someone that I think TV critics and people who follow TV closely have had to reckon with more than any of us have as music critics. And I think that was something that I was feeling that disconnect of. And admittedly, I had not listened to this record until about 5 p.m. the day of the Grammys. Thought it was fine. Some good stuff on there. But it was not something as a critic I felt that I had to reckon with prior to it winning the album of the year.
We have spoken at length about Mr. Batiste. Maybe now is the time to hear a little bit of what he is bringing to the table and to the stage. This is Freedom. Let's play the live version. Let's play Freedom live at the 2022 Grammys by John Batiste. Let me see your wild. Gio, who writes about jazz for us, wrote about John Batiste today. And I would venture to say, like, even Gio, within the framework of jazz criticism, it's not that John Batiste figures heavily in the center of the discourse around contemporary jazz, because what he does, it's not that. Wesley, you keep dodging these.
I'm not dodging. I mean, I'm struck by a few things. First of all, I'm struck by this idea, and I don't know how to take the use of this word with respect to John Batiste, but I am struck by the number of times the word reckoning has come up. Now, I will say personally that he is someone that I do reckon with. I think that's a conversation for another time. But I think from the standpoint of what we're talking about with the Grammys, it's not him that needs to be reckoned with. It's the institution that is recognizing his work. What came to mind to me when the nominations came out is a little bit what came to mind to me after I watched Coda, the Best Picture winner from last week. You know, when Coda ended, I have a really clear memory of sitting in my living room and saying, oh, this isn't fair. This is not fair. Like, this little movie that I'm sitting here weeping over is so good and is so not Power of the Dog or Dune or Licorice Pizza or Nightmare Alley. But I defy anybody who isn't also watching this movie in their living room, because that's where everybody was. I cannot believe that they're not going to put that first on their ballot. There's no way they don't do it. And I think John Batiste, it's a different sort of thing, but I do think with respect to what's fair, I mean, clearly somebody from whatever label he's on, enter him in the Grammy contest. What I'm saying is, I think it's unfortunate that all of this attention is being paid to him in this way. And this is why I'm glad he got to perform on the show when he did. Because I think for all of the people who didn't pay any attention to that album and who kind of just think of him as Colbert's, you know, use your term, because that's what I'm reckoning with. But he is a phenomenal musician. He can put on a show, because that was one of the three best performances I saw last night. I think that he is so genuine in his passion to do what it is he is doing. And the only other person I saw on stage last night who had that was Billie Eilish.
And Billie Eilish reacting to John Batiste. Like, actually, the best moment for me of the John Batiste performance is him running out into the crowd, jumping
on the table.
Oh,
and standing on the table, yeah.
Standing on the table where Billy and Phineas are sitting, and Billy responding very viscerally. Now, obviously, she knows she's on camera. She understands that this is being broadcast. It would not serve her well to just sit there and kind of twiddle her thumbs. But it did seem to be genuine, and the joy and the rapture is genuine. But, Wesley, I think you're right in terms of, like, if we're going to talk about reckoning, we're not going to talk about reckoning only with Batiste. We're going to talk about reckoning with the institution. And this is where, to me, the struggle is. The struggle is, here are a bunch of voters who seem to primarily interact with contemporary popular music through channels that are not the center of where popular music is most vibrant and most innovative. And if the entire Grammys is set up to please those people, then younger artists, innovative artists, are perpetually playing a losing game, which is what I was trying to allude to in the piece that I wrote last night, which is just like, how useful is Olivia Rodrigo being Olivia Rodrigo until she can be Olivia Rodrigo paying tribute to somebody? How useful is Billie Eilish being Billie Eilish until she can be Billie Eilish paying tribute to Tony Bennett 5 years from now, right? Like, how useful? Like, she's not going to be useful as Billie Eilish forever. And that's the thing that I find kind of most frustrating is look, Lady Gaga is basically a full-fledged institutionalist at this point in the context of the Grammys. She's 36. And I'm not saying Lady Gaga is making like super centrist pop records anymore. Chromatica stands do not come for me. I'm not interested in hearing it. But nevertheless, here is someone who has been just like worked fast through the game and now functions in a Grammy context largely as a bridge between generations. That's what the Grammys want for younger stars. They want younger stars to be viable for those future positions, not for what they actually are in real time. And that's continually disheartening for me, personally.
I agree with that 100%. I will compound that frustration by saying that I did find it interesting that Nas was the only rapper that we heard from, the only real rapper we heard from all night. I find it interesting. And, you know, by the way, that was Nas's first Grammy performance.
Wait, was that a shot of Lil Nas X?
I mean...
Sorry.
I'm not saying who I was taking shots at.
Okay. You
know, he was the only rapper we heard on last night.
I think related to that too, and to talking about this reckoning, I think something that completely got lost in the conversation last night that I did not even realize till this morning was that Jean-Baptiste is the first Black artist since 2008 to win Album of the Year. And the last one was Herbie Hancock for the Joni Mitchell tribute in 2008. Yep. Another Crazy. Jazz artist. So, and there's been a lot of discussion about hip-hop artists losing that award, winning, you know, the genre awards, but not having whatever it takes to appeal in this like Album of the Year sense. And I'm just curious what y'all have to say about that.
I would also like to add to that question, and JP, I'm actually curious what you think about this. If you tell hip hop artists, and whether it's hip hop artists like Tyler, who still seem to like hold the Grammys in like some kind of esteem, someone like Kanye, who in the past is held in esteem and now like is in constant open war, someone like Drake, who is basically like, I don't actually need this anymore. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. But if you continually tell the most kind of relevant and innovative artists of a huge, I don't even want to say a subculture, it is the dominant style of contemporary popular music. If you continually tell those people, number one, we are not going to honor you in our context. Like, we are not going to properly honor you. That's number one. Number two, all the people who you looked up to, we did them dirty. Like, we actually did them dirty in the past. So there's no guarantee that we're going to get it right in the future. The accreted power or the sort of like pain of that, doesn't that ultimately undermine the big picture legitimacy of the Grammys 10, 20 years from now? Like, forget what Jay Prince was saying about, hey, we need to have an alternate Grammys. Everybody should have a concert the same night. That would have been hilarious. And I definitely would have gone and I would have gotten a kick out of it. But like in the big picture, let's say that The Weeknd and Drake and Kanye never do Grammys counter-programming. Aren't the Grammys essentially counter-programming themselves out of relevance by continuing to ignore this particular segment of American popular culture?
Well, here's the thing. The Grammys have always been the older generation scolding the younger generation.
Mm-hmm. Look, I know that that's the discourse about the Grammys now. It's certainly like all we talk about.
No, but it
was that the discourse about the Grammys 20 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, they started in the 50s to say this rock and roll stuff is going to go away. In the 60s, they liked the Beatles because the Beatles had Tin Pan Alley attributes, but they didn't like a lot of other stuff. You know, it's Led Zeppelin getting a lot of Grammys. They're kind of like a crafts guild, and they want people to go through apprenticeship and journeymen before they are acclaimed as master craftsmen. So the mechanism of pop music where your first album is your crazy inspired genius album does not appeal to the craft guild mentality.
I mean, Stevie Wonder didn't start winning until his like 14th, 15th album. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's an interesting point, John, that I'd never quite considered in that exact way. There's what the Grammys want in terms of who wins them in the major categories, right? But then nobody makes these artists go out there year after year. Nobody made Justin Bieber sit at that piano last night. And like, by the way, he only played like four notes. He didn't really play the piano. He just sat there. Don't think I didn't notice that.
But
I mean, I'm not, but these artists, I feel like the to the degree that there's some kind of institutional pressure to for these artists to prove their bona fides. And the pressure that they feel to explore what live music can do in an environment that won't alienate people who pay to see you do the thing they paid to see you do. It's an interesting vice creatively to be put in to both simultaneously shrink and stretch during this show, depending on how you approach your performance.
Two thoughts on that. One, Frank Ocean said it really well many years ago when I interviewed him about learning to let go of like things that held value for you when you were on the outside looking in, and like understanding that they don't actually possess or occupy the same space of value when you are living through them that they did in your mind when they occupied like this kind of abstract position. That's something that I think a lot of artists are still reckoning with. And frankly, when presented with the opportunity to be a serious musician on the Grammys, someone like Justin Bieber, who for years has been derided, probably felt like, you know what, it's probably worth, let's call it 3 days of my time to be perceived that way, to at least have the opportunity to be perceived that way. The other thing is there are record labels or management companies or whatever who are deeply invested in the potential business implications of someone having a successful night at the Grammys, whether it's winning awards or having a big performance a la Brandi Carlile. Even if it's not the artist per se, there are other systems in place, I think, where people perceive the Grammys still as like a valorized thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I would bet anything that if BET or MTV had counter-programmed with Drake, Kanye, The Weeknd, and Cardi from some arena or even like a nightclub somewhere, I bet they would have done silly numbers, crazy numbers, and completely undermined the premise of like why people show up to the Grammys. That's how it feels. And we should talk about Lil Nas X. Let's actually listen to a little bit of Industry Baby. City talking, we taking notes. Tell him all to keep making posts. Wish he could, but he can't get OG. So proud of me that he choking up when we making toasts. I'm the type that you can't control. Said I would, then I made it.
This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at The New York Times. I have been trying to understand changes in migration. So I traveled with photographer Federico Rios to the Darien Gap, this hot, mountainous, 70-mile stretch of jungle straddling the border of Colombia and Panama.
We're hiking through a river, just like covered in mud.
Many used to think that this route was impassable, but thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the Darien, almost all in the hopes of making it to the United States. We spent 9 days hiking through the gap and weeks building trust and relationships with migrants, with smugglers, with migration authorities to even be able to do this reporting. We interviewed hundreds of people who have made this journey to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths to find a new life. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Welcome back to the Grammy cast. We're still here. Lindsay, Wesley, JP. The Lil Nas X performance to me was interesting because I thought that was an example, Wesley, what you were just saying, of kind of like expanding where it's like, I'm doing three. Y'all didn't think I was going to be here. I'm doing three songs. But actually, it's like the whole thing is like much tamer than you've come to generally expect from Lil Nas X's performance.
I mean, he was already self-consecrating.
Right.
He had already, I don't know.
On the record, Montero, I think there's several lines about the Grammys. Like, I think he's someone who still buys into that being this arbiter of mainstream success, and that like he's proving his haters wrong by being at the Grammys, by winning Grammys, which is kind of rare for a young artist and someone as iconoclastic as him. I think that's a way in which he is a little more conservative than some of his peers and some more like pure rap artists that aren't straddling that pop line the way that he is. There was a reverence to his performance, especially last night. I think the Old Town Road performance in 2020 was much better and much more of a moment.
Oh yeah, that was great.
That was one of the best ones of the modern Grammy memory. But I think he was someone who was looking almost like too comfortable on that stage last night, which is not what we come to expect from him. And Billy is an interesting counterpoint to that too, you know, and talking it like possibly the best thing that happened to Billie Eilish last night was that she got shut out and didn't win any Grammys. She does not need any more Grammys right now. I think, you know, and her winning that surprise record of the year award last year that she looked deeply uncomfortable to accept, because I think she even knew that that was not necessarily
meant for her.
Yeah. And so I think there's something to be said about young and in some ways like disruptive and a kind of classic artist getting a little too much of that cosign from the Grammys and it not appearing cool or it kind of like affecting their brand a little bit. I think Billy is an interesting person to talk about in that context too. Obviously having the big sweep in 2020. Two years ago now, which I also think set the expectation too high for Olivia Rodrigo to potentially replicate that moment, because sweeping the big four categories is something that's only ever happened two times in Grammy history. And I think there were some people that thought Olivia was going to do that. I was a little skeptical that that was going to happen, and it did not. Although I think she did not have the night that many people were anticipating for her. So yeah, that's a lot of thoughts.
One thing about the Billy thing is I think part of the reason, and again, each year is different, the quality of the nominees varies, et cetera. But I think Grammy voters felt comfortable giving Billie Eilish the big trophies because Billie Eilish is fundamentally conservative. I know I'm
going to die on this hill.
I'm going to die on this hill. I'm going to, or perhaps be murdered on this hill. It's unclear, but I will end up on this hill. But Billie Eilish is fundamentally conservative. And as a vocalist, the things that she are doing really resonate, I think, with traditional-minded Grammy voters, even if the context of those vocals is slightly different. Whereas the type of music that Olivia Rodrigo is harking back to is still fundamentally relatively contemporary music. We're talking like maybe 20-year-old pop punk or grunge or whatever.
But I also think that's a big reason of why Billie's performance last night was one of the best. I think if you're a Grammy voter, a Grammy watcher that only sees her in the context of these award shows and sees her Oscar performance last week, which, you know, was just doing the Bond theme. It's very classy. It's, she, you know, I love that she did Happier Than Ever and that she really leaned into the dynamics at the end of that song and just like really rocked out. It was awesome. I saw her tour last month. That was awesome too. And that like, that becoming sort of the signature song from this record that is otherwise in a lot of ways very conservative and sort of croony in a way that the Grammys would like. I like that she is leaning into sort of that bombast and that side of her that doesn't often get seen on the award show stage. She didn't win any awards. We're still talking about her. And that kind of goes to show that the performance aspect like still can be something that upstages someone with a good night. But also, again, she has been co-signed in this way that she both buys into because she was there last night, but also I think makes her and some of her peers uncomfortable. So
can I just also, I just want to say something about like what we've basically been talking about here. And I think that they're just watching other people reacting to the people on stage. I don't know if you guys saw that. You definitely saw it because they broadcast it. I don't know if you remember it. That ad that they had for the Recording Academy toward the end of the show, where they had all these artists come on, including her, and say, repeat this tagline, which is that I am the Academy. And the point of that, you know, infomercial was basically to say that this will no longer be going into the future, an institution of old white men. It's going to have Asian women and Latinos and Black women. And it's going to be this entirely diverse collection of people deciding who your Grammy winners are going to be. So if you're really bummed out about, you know, Natalie Cole winning Album of the Year in 1992 or whatever, don't worry, because in 2032, your Album of the Year winner stands a chance to be, or your Record of the Year stands to be the actual
Natalie Cole Jr.
But my point is that I actually don't think that if Drake and Kanye and The Weeknd had their own counter-revolution on some other channel, I don't think that any of those artists who were there last night go. I really don't, because I think the Grammys at this point, setting aside going up and picking up your hardware if you become a winner, I think the Grammys are really about the very thing that that infomercial was intended to do. It is a showcase for musicians who feel like they're musicians to go and celebrate the act of making and playing music. Think about what John Batiste said in his speech. He said, this is for real musicians. This is for people who make real music. And I don't... I know, John, I hear what you're saying. I understand what the implication... I know.
That's the kind of thing we've been fighting for decades as critics.
But what
we've
I'm
been fighting
saying
against
is,
that.
But what I'm saying is, JP, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a long-standing... I mean, as you said, the Grammys exist for this very problem. And I don't think that that distinction between, quote, real musicians and everybody else is going anywhere. And if anything, I think the Grammys are increasingly about that distinction being made very, very clear. Think about what Nas did last night. He didn't go out there by himself on stage. Now, I know what's in his genes as a musician. I know what's going on in there. So it didn't feel out of character for Nas. But Nas doesn't give that performance if they even invited him to the show 30 years ago, which they did not.
Let's actually listen to Nas on the Grammys performing Made You Look, a 20-year-old song, finally hitting the Grammy stage, which, even though I found it vexing, I have to be honest, did hit me in a little bit of a sweet spot.
Grammys, what up? Vegas, what up? They shooting. Oh, Made You Look. You a slave to a page in my rhyme book. Getting big money, playboy, your time's up. With them gangsters at, with them dimes at. They shooting.
I think Nas going out there with an orchestra and being like, I don't even know where to put him in terms of like which band leader to say he was even like getting near. I mean, it's more like Nat King Cole, really, right? And I think that what you're doing by participating in this show at this point, and one of the reasons that last year was so great too, was that it was like it's a mutual admiration club. Setting aside what the implications are for that with respect to popular music as a whole, I think what you're watching is a community enjoy its values. You're watching a value system be performed by people who also sell a lot of records. And I'm not,
it's like
not endorsing
it's like
it, John.
A Trump rally. It's like a Trump rally. Also, I mean, a gathering of people who share values.
Oh my God. So is a farmer's market, John.
Okay. But I'm saying the Nas performance was giving big 2002 energy. Like first time you saw a rapper perform with a jazz group. First time you saw a rapper perform with a band or an orchestra. Like he's giving this like very outmoded idea of.
Yes.
Of how,
yes. Yes.
Right. Right. But to your point about, you think that if this alternate thing was happening, that most people would not cross over. I don't disagree with that this year, but if it was something that happened this year and next year and the year after and the year after, I would bet anything by year five, the Grammys are in total free fall, because I think being valorized by your actual peers, like the actual people who you look at and you see across when you're like, hey, we're here at the top, you're also at the top. I think being valorized by those people is actually much more powerful than being valorized by your parents.
However, do you guys remember which rapper did, albeit a very tongue-in-cheek version of that same arrangement last year on the Grammys? DaBaby, pre-cancellation DaBaby.
Oh, yeah. I know.
That's
true. Yep.
It's convenient to forget that.
He did John Batiste before John Batiste was
wow,
even being thought about by the Grammys.
Just putting a little wrinkle in there. I mean, you know, the Grammys want you to forget that.
Okay. Point granted.
Here's the word the Grammys think they are conferring, legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And all the good stuff is illegitimate.
Right. Mm. Exactly.
But the Grammys have been unhip forever. So are people really still using the Grammys as a yardstick of their own value?
If Karen tells me I don't have to cover it next year, then no, I won't use it as a yardstick for anything.
But can I present some statistics here? I mean, some things that I'm going to call statistics, because I mean, I'm going to say quote statistics because I don't know if my numbers are going to be exactly right. But the point of what I'm about to say is 100% true. Two things. Thing number one, is it not true that more music that is not new is being streamed more than new music? Old music, I saw a couple statistics about this.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of it. I'm just going to present it to the group and you guys can like do what you want to do with it. Like I've read in two different places, two different studies that basically are saying, or reports saying that the majority of the music being streamed now is what I would describe as not contemporary. Meaning it's 5 years old and older.
Yeah, it's catalog. Yeah.
Right. And there's more of that being listened to, downloaded, streamed, and purchased than like current hits. That's one thing. I think there's something to this idea of vinyl coming back and now cassettes. I think that Leave the Door Open, I mean, Leave the Door Open is the legitimate song of the year. I mean, right next to Driver's License, but Leave the Door Open is the one that won Song and Record of the Year. And that was like one of the biggest hits of 2021. So, I mean, I do think that for all of this, I mean, again, like John Batiste is a, I mean, I understand it. And again, I don't think it's fair to John Batiste that he won Album of the Year. But I also think that we can't entirely talk about the Grammys being this museum of natural history because some of those dinosaurs are walking the earth still.
First of all, nothing better will be said about John Batiste's Album of the Year win than what you just said. That's unfair to him. That's dead on. The Silk Sonic thing, I have a question about Silk Sonic, and I'm actually really interested to hear what everybody feels about this. Because, like, I agree. This is one of the most potent, most popular, best-made songs of 2021. Like,
I agree.
For sure. Hands down.
I agree.
Like, 100%. Wesley, we should circle back to talk about the thing you said in the video about it being a comedy song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk about that too. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't totally agree with.
What about we'll the potato chips? Of course it's comedy.
I laugh every time I listen to the song.
There's
it's
a difference
so
between
funny.
It being funny and a comedy song, though. There's two different things. But anyway, the sidebar. Here's the thing that I don't totally understand about Leave the Door Open and also subsequent Silk Sonic hits.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that they're good. I understand that they're expertly made. I know that Bruno Mars is a popular musician who had not put out music for quite some time. And this is kind of like new Bruno Mars.
It's only been 3 years.
Fairly long. It's like seven lifetimes. It's like seven Billie Eilish albums in that time. I don't know. But why is that song so popular when it is so out of step with everything else that is happening in the context of contemporary popular music? Because the thing that I was struck by, and I was trying to hold it up against, say, like recent, like the Adele hit, that was like kind of not an actual hit, TBQH.
You mean from a sales standpoint?
On a kind of like, it's not like a pop radio hit at the level that maybe older Adele was. But the thing about Silk Sonic is like, I was hearing that on Z100 and Hot 97, and it was a cross-format, legitimate radio hit, streaming hit, successful video, etc. But it has nothing to do with anything else that's happening in contemporary pop. Why do you think that song was so effective, given what to me feels like a constraint, which is this constraint of extreme hyper-stylization that's not modern? Why do you think the song worked nevertheless?
Well, you know, John, it often happens that if everybody is zigging and you zag, you have the hit. Mm-hmm. That was what made Lady Gaga at the beginning, was that she was doing, you know, European style stomping electropop dance music when everybody else wasn't yet. Also, I mean, that song is it's funny. It's expert, as you say. It's soothing. It's, I don't know, it's charming. Maybe people needed it as a relief. We should be dancing, romancing in the East Wing, in the West Wing of this mansion was added. I ain't playing no games, everyone that
hear that song, and the genius, of course, of Bruno Mars is you can never exactly put your finger on the soul of the thing that he's stolen or that he's conjured, right? He's lured out of the bottle.
Tough word.
And reframed. I just think he's so good at that. And I think that the thing that makes the song so good is that it really does. It is a major zag. There's something to its popularity in the context of the, I mean, again, like the possible legitimacy of these numbers with respect to catalog being dominant over contemporary.
As far as the catalog contemporary thing, I mean, my struggle with that is like, catalog has always been very popular.
Sure, you know, sure.
Like, but now radio is huge. It's real, like Ted Gioia core, this kind of argument of just like, wanting
John.
To cut. It is. I'm sorry. It is. I love you. But it is like, it just feels very straw man-y to me.
I agree. I think that those statistics sort of make visible something that was maybe in the past you're measuring by sales rather than listens. People are probably listening to older music in their collection as frequently as they're, you know, they're just not buying it in the moment.
They already
own it. I think streaming makes that listening dynamic visible and measurable. But I also was watching the show. I think someone made a comment about how the expansion of a lot of these categories from 5 or 8 to 10, which was entirely too many. And we can, you know, talk about what was revealed.
It has to end. It really
going
has
the
to go
8
back
to 10.
To
I mean, the montages of like the nominee list for
just
went on and on and on in these big categories.
Minutes, yeah.
And half those people aren't even there. So I think that they framed that as sort of a way of like responding to streaming being the dominant mode of listening. That means there's that many more songs out there and stuff. And I don't really buy that argument because they're still mostly nominating the most popular artists. Like they're not opening it up to more independent artists too. They're just taking the most popular 10 versus the most popular 5 in a lot of these cases. But I think the only mention of streaming or any sort of like digitization thing was in a positive light in that way, when that's just like such a tension in the industry right now. I don't know if this is a question or a comment, but I think we do have to talk about that expansion of the categories and how I felt like it was really something that did not work.
Well, it also didn't work because the famous people didn't win. Like part of it was like, we're gaming the system to make sure famous people show up and maybe win. And then in fact, Grammy voters were like, honk, honk, absolutely not. We just want the grandpa in the child's clothes.
Well, but also if you have 10 selections, a plurality can win. All of the studio musicians who played on Bruno Mars's album can vote for it and he has a better chance of winning.
All 500 of them. Yeah.
I found it interesting that, you know, so when it was sort of revealed right after the nominations came out that there was this last minute, you know, move from expanding the category to 8 to then to 10, that happened only a week before the nominations were announced, after, you know, the Grammys told us they had purged of all the shadiness and the review committees were gone. You know, everything's on the up and up now. And then immediately...
And shout out Ben and Joe for breaking
that
incredible story,
reporting.
Even though it landed over Thanksgiving and nobody cared.
Yeah.
But honestly, we didn't break that story.
I smelled a rat immediately.
But I was thinking last night about how the revelation of that reporting was that the artists who benefited, almost all of them didn't show up anyway. It was Taylor Swift. It was Kanye West, who in a category of his own, ABBA, which thank God we didn't have to reckon with that, I have to say.
Wow.
So that is a failed experiment. And I was thinking last night too of, Wesley, I agree with a lot of what you're saying about how like, I think there were a lot of wins for like the right thing or one of the best possible options winning. And I think in the genre categories, particularly Jasmine Sullivan winning R&B album, which I was shocked that they got that one right.
And so pleased. And
so pleased. Mm-hmm. And her speech was just wonderful. And she got a televised moment. But also the right album won Rap Album of the Year, which how often can we say that? Tyler, the Creator, who was not there. So those win their genre categories, but neither of those are nominated for Album of the Year. And then you flesh out the list with these A-listers who aren't even going to show up because they know that they were added at the last minute anyway. Like, what's the harm in putting a Jasmine or a Tyler in that 8 or 9 slot.
Taylor Swift won Album of the Year last year, right? And if you're still going to play these games, if you're still going to be like, well, you know, we can't have Ed Sheeran in the Album of the Year category because then he'll win and people will be mad that a white guy won. Like, I want the award shows to tell the truth about the people who are responsible for them. And they keep lying. And talk about January 6th, Sean, right? Like, every year they are saying that Joe Biden's not the president, basically. I think that is insane. And so if you're going to rig it so that Kanye and Taylor Swift are among the nominees, make it worth their while to come whether they're nominated or not. Give them some sweet deal if you want them to perform. But Jasmine Sullivan, Chris Stapleton, same is true for Tyler. All of these academies are a mess. And I think that at some point, this attempt to democratize a system that does not want democratization winds up embarrassing everybody.
Which is why I stand with the dissenters.
Burn it all down. I can't believe I agree.
But yes, but this is, and that is the thing, because I do think fundamentally most artists, even people who are like classic minded artists, whether it's a Billy or a Lady Gaga, mid-career Lady Gaga or whatever, like want to look at their peers and feel like, yes, I'm among them. I'm being celebrated by these people who I respect because we came up together.
And that part I kind of like, honestly, I truly do. I like the sort of school band aspect of the Grammys as a show.
I thought actually a good example of the kind of like, hey, we're peers and we're in this together was SZA and Doja Cat.
I yes. wanted to get there too.
Talk about a little comedy show right there. First of all, Doja Cat, tremendous comedian.
I mean, have you heard? I mean, we've all heard her sing and rap.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite moment of the night. That they won was great, but also it was like an actual jolt of kind of like, oh my God, can you actually believe what the hell is happening here right now? And I think because they see themselves, I imagine, on the outside of what the Grammys valorize. So to have this
she went to the bathroom
like,
before a category even came up.
And did Incredible. You guys see, because when SZA was like, girl, you're in the bathroom for 5 minutes, someone on Twitter was like, that means Doja is in the bathroom for Bieber's performance. Which I love that so much. I will admit I have not entirely been on board with Doja Cat in the past, but I feel like I understood her more last night than I ever have and appreciated her. And I was thinking of that speech when we were talking earlier about sort of this crowning of legitimacy that a Grammy win, I think, still does bring. And I thought Doja was really the only person to thread that needle between the absurdity of the moment, but also a genuine reverence for what was happening. And there were literally sort of two halves of that speech. There's, you know, the vaudeville accent you get in the beginning and her doing her whole comedic number and having just a pitch perfect delivery of that line about the fastest pitch she'd ever taken. That you could feel the CBS censors do, like, in real time. Can we say piss? No one's ever tried to say piss on the Grammys.
Looking on the George Carlin list, like, is it on here?
That was beautiful chaos. But then there's this moment where she kind of collects herself and realizes what's happening. And we get this really uncharacteristic moment of genuine emotion from her that I was very moved by. I think it's the first time I've seen Doja Cat cry, and it felt very real. And I think even better than the P quote was her saying, what was it? I play a lot of this shit off. Like, it doesn't matter.
We can just play it.
Pedro, we can play it. Bleeped or unbleeped, whatever brings you joy.
I like to downplay. But this is a... It's a big deal.
Lindsay, the reason that moment works so well is because we know perfectly well Doja Cat is like, yeah, I'll show up to the Grammys, but they're not going to give me a Grammy. They're not going to give me a Grammy. And then it's like, uh-oh, damn. And then it's like that kind of like real-time modulation of like, I have to be myself, but also like I have to take this seriously. And that is something she probably wasn't totally prepared for. And SZA as well, like probably not totally prepared to have happen. Now, my concern is like at next year's Grammys, like who's Doja Cat going to be paying tribute to? Like, who are they going to make her? You know what I mean? Like, wait, are they going to make her like sing Donna Summer songs and rap Queen Latifah songs? Like, what are they going to do? Like, that's It's going to drive me nuts.
They have been doing less of that, though.
Yes, I agree.
Since the regime change at the production of the Grammys, there's not so much Grammy momenting.
And in this case, this year, the Her Grammy moment was actually was bringing elder generations onto her playing field, theoretically.
But that
Lenny
was
Kravitz,
surreal.
Travis Barker, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. Let's listen. Let's actually listen to a little bit of Her in flagrante duet with Lenny Kravitz.
I was born long ago. I am the chosen, I'm the one. I have come to save the day. And I won't leave until I'm done.
So you try, you got to try. You got the feeling of a bug.
On the one hand, John Caramonica, I think you're the person among us that knows this maybe the best about me, but I have loved Lenny Kravitz since 1989. I knew that that person was a kindred spirit for me. I was always baffled by, as a young person, the critical disdain for Lenny Kravitz, right? Talk about Silk Sonic and Leave the Door Open. I mean, It Ain't Over Till It's Over is Leave the Door Open for 1993 or whatever, right? I feel like the ways in which a person like Lenny Kravitz, who was derided for being a ripoff artist, like, oh, he stole all this stuff, and he sounds like Hendrix, and he's not like... I mean, it wasn't even postmodern then. It was just like, this is music he obviously liked. But we have now entered this phase in which he sort of looks like a harbinger, or, I don't know, he presaged something. And now an organization that had no interest in Lenny Kravitz for the entire peak of his commercial popularity and artistic inspiration is now like, can you come out and pay tribute to our hothouse flower, Her, and play one of your ignored hits for us, please?
They did Lenny like they did Nas, to be honest.
Yes. John Perellis, does this strike you? Am I making any sense? Is this like...
Yeah, you're totally making sense. The Grammys catch up really late. It was great to see a keytar. Come on.
Yes, Jimmy and Terry. Yes, it was nice to see Jimmy with his keytar.
Her is someone who is extremely acclaimed in the context of award shows, but has not totally had the radio and other catalog that's totally caught up to that, although it is starting to balance out. But
is
to
it?
Have upper... yeah, she had a couple of hits last year, a couple of radio hits last year.
I just wonder. I mean, I'm just curious about that. Yes.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's moving in that direction. But the idea that Travis Barker, Lenny Kravitz, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, three different styles of, like, forgive me for the Travis Barker part, but like funky rock, right? Or rocky funk, or however you want to frame it.
I mean, he killed it last night, though. I mean, he was all in.
I also heard it wearing Tiffany and jewels, I heard. So, like, you know, God bless. But linking Her to three, like, different modalities and being able to nail all of them, I thought was, like, actually the biggest favor the Grammys could have done. Rather than put
to
her
whom?
In service to her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really showed off versatility, dynamism, and also this kind of, like, circle of trust and respect that real musicians have with each other. Allegedly.
Let's be real, though. She's been performing at this show for what? This is her fourth or fifth year at the Grammys? If you're a regular Grammys watcher, she's never done the same thing twice. Every time she goes out there, it's a different thing. Her ability to do anything, wasn't she the person who did the Prince tribute?
Yes.
She is an industrial artist. I don't know what, she's like a house band for Hollywood industrial functions at this point. That is not a knock, because I can't think of anybody else who previously had that job. Somebody that everybody knows can bring it, do it, and probably be on time, get it in under budget. I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything about her, but like, I do feel like her constancy, her durability, her output, the accolades for that output. This is a person now who has an Oscar and a bunch of Grammys. And I feel like I understand the story that she is being offered to tell about music, music education, authenticity. I mean, she was one of the people in that video who was like, I am the Academy. And she indeed is. And I don't know, I'm super duper torn about like what about the Grammys is supposed to matter or what about the show is supposed to matter. Because, you know, when I was a kid, there was a snooze period in the middle of the show. You guys remember this, like where they would bring out Yo-Yo Ma and Dee Dee Bridgewater or Chick Corea. Like, and you know, as a kid, you'd be like, oh Lord, this is like, well, when's Michael Jackson coming back? Ah. But that was the Academy doing the thing that they have now managed to, because everything has sort of collapsed in a way that it couldn't have in, you know, 1991, where like U2 was on one side of the show and, you know, some other, you know, Madonna was on the other side. And in the middle was all the like serious, important musician oriented music. I now feel like rock and roll is the jazz of that previous era of the Grammys. It is an art form and a genre. That is the thing that is being used to legitimize, you know, I'm thinking about like where Lady Gaga and Nas last night fit into this. But I do think there's something about rock and roll now being the art form that tells an audience and tells the audience in the room that these people are real.
Yes. And this is, you mean guitar solos? Oh my God. Apparently guitar solos are back.
I think in a way, Billy and Olivia's performances fit into that rubric really well because, you know, Billy shows off her prowess for rock music at the end, you know, to people that didn't know maybe she could switch into that gear. And something that I really liked about the driver's license performance was it was a little more rocky and there were sort of the grungy guitars on the bridge that kind of elevated that arrangement for me. But it also, I think, was showing off Olivia's sort of rock bona fides. And even though there are more rock oriented songs on that record, I think it was bringing that aesthetic a little bit in to the Grammy stage. So I think that stands for me.
Are we calling it next year MGK Grammy performance? Are we calling it now?
I'm going to leave that one alone, but...
JP, is this the best case scenario for the Grammys to have an artist like her, to have an artist like Billie Eilish, who sort of the thing that maybe doesn't thrill me, but maybe is the best possible solution, which is someone who scans as a young hit maker but really is in thrall to like more traditional styles. Is this the best case scenario? Is her performing with Lenny Kravitz, the unjustly maligned Lenny Kravitz, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, and the diamond draped Travis Barker, is that actually what these future Grammy moments are all going to look like? Grammy moments, quote unquote.
Grammy moments, TM.
Yes, right. But is this the best case scenario?
Here's the paradox of the Grammys. The Grammys are the recording academy. Recording is about tricks and manipulation and ooh, illusion. And then the Grammys come on and say, you got to impress us by how you can perform. And then Brandi Carlile comes on and she performs the hell out of a song. And then her comes on and suddenly she's slamming the drums with all the muscle that she needs. It's not what these people do the other 364 days of the year.
That's an amazing point. It's an amazing point. And it reminds me of something that did happen last night that we didn't talk about because there was, I have two questions. But the thing that you, what you bring up, John, is interesting to me because we have not talked about Baby Keem winning. Was it rap collaboration?
Rap duo or group performance? Best rap performance. Sorry, just straight best rap performance.
Okay. Why didn't he perform last night?
Well, number one, he's not famous, and that's a proxy Kendrick win, yeah, as far as I'm concerned.
Who closed the show?
Honestly, Loki, I agree with you. I thought that was a bizarre choice to end the show.
Yeah.
I actually thought they were kind of good.
They were good, but that, I mean, Baby Keem could have been good too.
Yes. not that good. Not that good. Not that good. Proxy Kendrick win. Sorry.
Hate okay,
to say it.
Fair.
To all my Baby Keem heads out there, proxy Kendrick win.
My other question is, I mean, I know SZA's on crutches, but they couldn't find her a comfy chair to sit in. Why didn't they perform?
Mariah Carey performs like 30 chairs every time she does a concert. One of them had to be available for SZA. I totally agree. Why doesn't Doja Cat perform? Again, totally, totally agree.
The best rapper in the room that night didn't even get near a microphone to perform.
100% true. Wow. I thought I was coming in at a high point, and now I am back to being dispirited. What a true pleasure it is to be brought low.
What was the low part? What were you high about? Because I actually thought that I didn't mind the show.
I didn't mind it either. I think the first hour was kind of like...
We were high on it because the show wasn't horrible.
Yeah, the first hour really kind of got me going. I really was like, you know what?
I agree.
BTS, I don't even like this BTS song, but I'm in. I'm in for whatever they're doing.
You sure you
want to
say that publicly, John?
It's too late. I already said it. It was better live than it is on record. I apologize. I'll go private on Twitter, I guess. Live. You know, the Rodrigo performance, the Billy performance, all of that, I mostly enjoyed. But after an hour of discourse, it's hard not to be reminded about the systematic things that make this such an unpleasant night for all of us.
That's what we're here for. That's the critical role.
Aw. I want to go out with what I actually think is the best her, like, radio song. Which is actually not a her song. It's a Jhené Aiko song. It's called BS. A her is the featured performer. But
I love it.
It's very good. We'll play the her verse on that. That's our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group. Get in the Discord. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Apple, Google, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you, Wesley, Lindsay, JP. Our producer, as ever, is Pedro Rosado from Hepstepper Media. We will be back next week. Here's her with some of that BS. Yeah.
Seen you with your ex, I see you still about your old ways. Might just see him for the weekend, you say that's a cold play. I be feeling triggered, I don't know how to let it go. Really, you ain't shipping, I know I'm too emotional.